Allison Rosen.
Hey everyone, it's me, Allison, from Allison Rosen is your new best friend. On Monday, I was joined by comedian Dave Anthony, and we learned a little about his complicated relationship with his dad.
Well, what was your dad like when he would drink?
He was actually often nicer. It was that when he wasn't drinking, he wasn't. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, so then you'd be like, oh, so you got to get booze to be around your kid? And then he did stuff. Like, he was a terrible drunk. Like, he brought home, and he was a philanderer. So here's an example. He brought home a date. He brought a date home, but he was married.
To your mom?
Yeah.
And then on Thursday, Matt, Gary, Chris, Jenna, and I got to the heart of Matt's unique shower habits. Subscribe to Allison Rosen as your new best friend on iTunes or go to AllisonRosen.com. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. I love you.
Allison's your new best friend.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and I just want to thank you for joining the Dr. Drew podcast and supporting the Corolla Pirate Ship here at the Corolla Network. And please, just a reminder, tell a friend about these podcasts. That is how this thing grows organically, and that is how we want this to grow. We want it to be a community of people that connect, and we talk about interesting things. And by the way, feel free to give us feedback and stuff, particularly for my show, that you'd like to hear. We'll be happy to set it up on the program. And again, tell a friend and keep this pirate ship afloat.
This is Corolla Digital.
Welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. Listening to those groovy sounds just reminds me that Chris Maxipata and I have been working on the new
LP. It's a
LP.
Full.
LP. An LP with more groovy sounds for your groovy listening. But they're actually really good. They're really cool. And it's going to be fun.
Really cool 60s feel. There.
Yeah, it's sort of Mad Men feel. So thank you for listening and welcome to the program, Jillian Barbary. Hey, Jillian.
Hi, Dr. Drew.
How are you? Jillian was on my HLN program recently. And we're going to see a lot of her on the show. And
yeah.
She said, what about my podcast?
I went, yeah, well, every girl would come by and say, oh, I just did Dr. Drew's podcast. I'm like, I got jealous. Like I was.
What about me?
Like I was like your wife, Susan, going, who are those girls? I don't like this. So yeah, I said, hello, when are you going to have me on? So thank you.
So let me detail Jillian's stuff. If you're not, you will be in just a second. Remembering Jillian, she was a sideline reporter for Fox. She's
this is my eulogy.
Good Day LA. No. I mean, it's a podcast. You have to be able to identify somebody.
Exactly. Google me.
Skating with Celebrities in 2006. Her Twitter handle is at AskJillian. There's a website, thejillianbarbary.com.
Yes, jillianbarbary.com was taken. It's a porn site. Nothing to do with me. My lawyer said, yeah, we'll get on that. And I think it's still a porn site.
Well, what are they going to do?
It's my name, and I have nothing to do with pornography. Not that I don't have friends in it. I know some girls that are in it, and whatever floats your boat. But yeah, it was, I wanted to, you know, do a .com, and I went to get jillianbarbary.com, and it was a website full of porn.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Well, or not. Yeah.
Well done. Do you want to tell a story about how we met?
You know, it's funny. I just saw your wife backstage, and she said, oh, yes, how we met was very interesting. Do you want to tell it? So I was working at Fox at the time, and I was doing the 10 o'clock news.
Were you here?
I just come from Miami. So it was 21 years ago.
Wow.
Well, I know that because your kids are 21.
Yeah.
That's how I know. And they were screaming infants at the time.
God.
But so I had listened to you on Loveline. And I just, something familiar about your voice. I trusted you. I was going through some issues and I didn't know anyone in LA, but I just driving home every night after the news, after work, I would hear you and you were with Poor Man and Ricky Rackman at the time.
Wow.
And I had a long drive back down Huntington Beach and the voice was soothing and you seemed to know what you were talking about with all those crazy callers calling in on Loveline. And I trusted you. So when I went to work one night in between before our 10 o'clock news went on, I went through our computer system and I said, I know they must have his name in there because I wasn't going to call in the show.
Whoa.
I didn't want to do it publicly. So I found your home number.
Wow.
And I had the balls, the tenacity to call you at home, not only at dinner time. You were, I think, doing hospital stuff still. You were on the air. And
it was busy time.
Proceeded
Super
to
busy.
Well, who was busier than your wife, Susan? You know, feeding three babies.
Oh, crazy!
So I called you around 6:30-ish, and I remember distinctly hearing the sounds of babies crying in the back.
Oh, absolutely.
And your wife.
That was constant. I remember I was carrying a baby as I was talking to you.
I remember the phone call like it was yesterday. And you said to me.
It was so confusing to me. I was like,
who are you?
What?
Huh? Why are you calling me at home?
I was like, wow.
And that's just sort of the ignorance and the sort of desperate nature of what was going through my head at the time. I called. And so Susan answered. And I said, hi, is this Dr. Drew's residence? And she was like, groupie, what? Yes. What do you want with my husband? I said, I'm sorry. You know, can I speak with him? It won't take long. And she was kind enough in all that craziness to put you on the phone. And you were kind enough to, you know, not hang up on me and actually
We talked for a while, it seemed like.
We did, and you gave me the names of some women to call to deal with what I was dealing with, and I told you recently I didn't call them right away. I think just talking to you was enough to sort of put me in the right direction, and after that it took me a couple of more years to actually reach out. Yeah, and
well, to me, the most stunning part of the story, the part I will never forget, is how you came to realize there was an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell that part? Are you willing to tell that part of the story?
Then
if you don't want to.
Oh, no. Was it the story about the news anchors in Miami?
You were sitting in the makeup booth?
Yes.
Right.
Okay. So I was.
I think you told me that story that night.
And did I really?
I think so. Because
it must be the permeating story of how I came to.
It stayed so vividly with me. It's like, so
well, it's so funny. And I remember it just like it was yesterday as well. I was 25 and I was in the makeup room with this beautiful anchor woman and a beautiful girl doing sports. And it was very heavily female driven, this newscast. They were really progressive and it was all about women. And it was just a great, great station to work for in Miami. And there was a story about, I think, some kids. There was a breakdown or bust on some child pornography. And one of the stories was involving this kid who had, you know, a family member molest them. And I said I remember looking at the story and the girls were watching it in the makeup room and they felt so bad and they had so much sympathy and empathy for this child. And I was like, huh. And I remember saying, well, everybody goes through stuff like that. Like every girl goes through getting molested. And they were like, what? And they said, well,
but let's focus that, because she didn't say it. Matter of fact, she literally said like, well, why are you guys reacting so strongly?
I mean,
everybody goes through that.
Everybody goes through it.
And I think
yeah.
you even mentioned your grandfather or something
sure.
to them.
Yeah.
And they were.
I said a creepy uncle and a grandfather. They were like, no.
No, and the air went out of the room.
Correct. It got very quiet. And then I said, are you guys just, I'm just open about it. And maybe you don't want to talk about it.
Wow.
And they were both like, I remember one of the girls, Deb Coffin, was like, yeah, no, that's absolutely never happened to me. I can assure you of that. And the other anchor woman said, I can assure you it never happened in my family either.
And so they could have pushed back, and what went through your head at that point?
That something was wrong.
Did you panic or did you think,
no,
uh-oh?
I've never been a real panicker that way. I've always been the kind of person that just sort of takes things as they come. You know, my co-host, Steve Edwards, used to say that I run through mountains of trouble. Like I just go at it full force. If it scares me, I tackle it, but it's the small things that can throw me. So I really, it didn't bother me. But it was the first sign that told me something could be a little different with my situation. It didn't happen to everybody. And what was that about?
And did you keep thinking about it? Were you like obsessing about
it? Still took me many years. And then I came out here and then it started to affect me and it just bothered me. And so that's when I called you. Lucky you on that. Crazy.
You seemed anxious that night.
Oh my gosh, I'm sure I was.
Okay, okay. So
I think
do get anxiety.
I've never. Well, now I get full on anxiety attack. I didn't realize. I've done 3 Super Bowls. You know, been on the sidelines for Fox for 3 Super Bowls. Never had anxiety until I remember going out on an audition, and I think it wasn't for Mad TV because I did Mad TV. It was some other show, kind of like that, sketch comedy. And I remember sitting in the parking lot and not being able to move and thinking, what's happening? Like, I don't want to go to the audition. I didn't go.
Oh.
And not realizing it was anxiety. Or I went to a therapist after I talked to you. You know, years later, I finally got it together. And I would tell her that when I came home from grocery shopping, I had to get the groceries out of the bag, like out of the car, out of the bags, into the cupboard, like within 10 minutes. I had to give myself this. And I don't know if that was OCD or anxiety or what that was. But yeah, it was crazy. And I still have it to this day.
Did that particular behavior have something to do with stuff that would happen in your home of origin? Something about putting
I don't know.
Things away? Or
I don't know. Well, no, I don't know because I think back and
unpacking.
No, I think that was just my stuff. My parents weren't anal like that at all.
Well, no. I mean, did you have to rush into the house so somebody didn't get their hands on you?
Oh, no. See, the perpetrators in my situation didn't live at the house, so it was rare that I would see them. But I certainly, when I did, it would happen. Absolutely.
Did you ever have to spend the night at their house kind of thing? Would you unpack?
No. Okay. But my situation was more, my OCD was like I used to do cartwheels to school. I lived, pretty close to the school, and the neighbors would watch me do cartwheels the whole way,
all the way to school.
Yes, but I had to do them in so many. So I would step out the door, and it was always 37. I don't know why, but I would step out my door, and I go 37. And I do my first cartwheel was 38, 39, 40, and do it the entire way to school. And I had to have 211 by the time I got there, no matter how. So I would have to do huge cartwheels or mini ones by the time.
Wow.
37 to 211. Is that crazy?
Well,
I was probably in the fifth grade at the time.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating. And it shows you had a lot of energy, right? You're dissipating a lot of energy. I love the idea of 37. I wonder what that meaning was for you.
I don't know. It's so weird because I'm 37 now. So it's like strange.
Wow.
No, I'm so not. But anyway. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But anyway, you sort of put me on that path of the direction was towards help, and that's what I did.
Do you want to share the story, what happened, or do you want to know?
Yeah, no, I don't care. Okay. I mean, I came from my situation was, I think because I was adopted, I thought that molestation happened in families with adopted kids because they weren't really flesh and blood. Or maybe that was just myself telling myself that to get over.
I can understand how an adopted child would do that. Yeah. Let's break it down even further. Where were you adopted from? How old were you?
I was born in Toronto, and my birth mother put me up for adoption.
Ford family? No.
Yes. Me and Mayor Ford go way back. Explains a lot. Can you believe? Is that insane?
Insane.
And then he had a complete meltdown yesterday, right?
I couldn't hear the pussy comment
because
it was blanked everywhere.
It was so disturbing.
And then he said, I plan to eat at home. I have to go out for that.
But, I'm thinking, okay, is this, and everyone went on the attack, which I totally understand. But then I'm going, what if he was like a really sexy guy? And like, would that be different? Would we say, oh my God, would women go, gee, lucky wife? But instead he's so like vile to look at that we I mean?
I think there's a little bit of that, but I think mostly it's because he's a politician.
I expect it from politicians to be like this. I mean, Anthony Weiner, I just expect politicians to be on the down and dirty, but most of them don't say it.
They don't say it. When they come out and say it, then we're going to go have
at them. Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly what I think with him. And that's why when I was on your show the other night with Ann Coulter, whom I love, Ann, do not agree with any of her politics.
But isn't she lovely off the camera?
Yeah, like,
people don't know that about her.
I know.
And she doesn't want people to know
that. She doesn't.
That.
And she said that. We were talking to her with your producer, with Bert, and he said, you came across downright lovely on The View. And she said, oh, I'm doing something wrong. Like I'm gonna lose my fans.
My brand.
And so she was talking about it, and she said, her friends in Toronto love him. And I'm thinking, well, of course you want people to think that because you're a Republican. And my family, who is all Democrats that live up there and voted for this asshole, they hate him. They all want him out of office. So, it is what it is. But anyway, getting back to just going through that.
So you were adopted in from Toronto. Do you know your birth parents? Or do you
well, yeah. I hired a detective, 10 years ago.
So found what was my whole the deal? Family. What was the story?
Their story was they were very young. They were both immigrants. My mother was born in Dublin. My father is Lithuanian, and he was born in London.
Wow.
So, I couldn't even pronounce his last name. I didn't even know how to pronounce it. It's Butoyskis.
Lithuanians are very, very smart people.
Yes, they are. Are you Lithuanian?
No, but I'm sort of Belarus Ukrainian.
Yeah,
kind of
okay. So, they both immigrated to Canada at 17. With different families, obviously, I met and got pregnant with me. And, it was the 60s and it was very taboo not to be married. And I think they had their issues back then, but they decided to put me up for adoption, did so. And I became a ward of the state right away. Like I was with foster care for like a year.
Wow. From birth to 1 year of age.
Yeah.
Do you have any memories of that?
No,
nothing,
none.
Zero.
No. But I
any
do know.
Weird feelings or dreams or anything?
Nothing. I mean, I've seen some letters that the people that took care of me wrote to the people that ended up adopting me eventually. And they were really beautiful letters. And
so we can pretty much bet that probably the foster care was good. It was good.
I'm thinking it was a good experience. Okay. Yeah, I'm hoping. But I was with five families.
Across that year?
Uh huh.
Oh, my God.
Kind of crazy, right? And then at that point, my family officially adopted me.
It's interesting you leave this part out of your story when you tell it usually.
Well, I don't, you know, I always think of it as a separate story. But interestingly enough, I did have the opportunity to hired a detective when I was 34, and I met my whole family because my mother and father ended up getting married 3 months after they put me up for adoption.
Oh, no kidding.
And they tried to get me back.
Did they appreciate meeting you? They like it?
Well, they wanted to get me back, I guess, back then.
But I mean, now was it a good thing for them?
It was amazing. I mean, yeah. I didn't even...
Because usually those things are very disappointing.
Well, you know, someone once said to me, won't it be disappointing if they're, you know, deceased? And I said, no, it'll be disappointing if they reject me. Mm. That will be a bigger disappointment. But of course, no, they got married and had two other daughters. So I have full sisters.
Them?
Yeah, they just left. I mean, I have a huge relationship with my family, with my birth family.
Wow.
Yeah, my
Has that
sisters
been healing
are amazing.
For you? Has that been important?
Unbelievably so.
Wow.
My sister, who is the middle sister, she went from being basically, you know, Marsha Brady to Jan Brady. She was demoted in a hurry because they didn't know about me. So I'm like, hi, I'm the sister. Funny. And to give you an idea of the sense of humor of the family, my father called my sister, who is an engineer. She's the smart one. And then the youngest one, who was 22 when I met her, works at Toronto International Film Festival.
Fantastic.
So she's, yeah, they're very.
Yeah, we have the Irish virus.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure, yeah, more than a few of them do. And are pretty honest about it. And they don't look at it as a virus.
I know. Neither does Mayor Ford. Just saying. That's that European thing.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely is. But my father, you know, I called him on a Friday night. I couldn't pronounce his name because the detective said, whatever you do, do not call these people because chances are, you know, even if maybe they've divorced, you don't know if they're still together. You don't know if they have other families. And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. What? I could not wait to get off the phone with the detective.
Wow, wow, wow.
So they give you the information. You write it all down. And I remember calling 411. I called Directory's Assistance on a Friday night. It was like 4 o'clock.
Oh, my God. They should do that. What's that TV show about the family background?
Oh,
that,
yeah. That
Who Are You or whatever.
Yeah, Who Are You? I know.
It'd be interesting.
It was very surreal, I'm sure, for him more than me because I, you know, was armed.
Did he freak out when you called?
Well, it's funny. It was 7 o'clock in Toronto when I called him, and I couldn't pronounce his last name, which was Butoiskis, which is very Lithuanian. Yeah. And so I just said, is this Vince? He said, hello. And I said, hi, is this Vincent Michael? And he said, it is. And I said, well, this is going to be the weirdest call you ever received. And he said, should I sit down? And I said, yes.
Oh, he knew.
Oh. And then
he knew right away.
Next words were, is it you? And I said,
it is. From him?
Yeah.
Wow.
I said, it is me. And he said, oh, my God.
Yeah. How crazy is that he knew right away?
He knew.
That's
well,
insane.
I think when I said this is going to be the craziest call.
But still, though, you would think 50 things could run through his mind.
That's true.
Yeah.
Like debt collectors and things
right,
like that.
Yeah.
But he said, is it you? And I said, it is. And then he.
What did he say?
Oh, my gosh. He said, I can't wait. First of all, the next thing he said was, do you hate us? And I said, what? No. You don't understand. Like, I've got this incredible life. And no, I'm calling to thank you and just tell you you made the right decision. And then about an hour into the conversation, he said, wait until I tell your sisters. And I said, oh, my God, you got married again. And I have half sisters. And he's like, No, I married your mother, and you have full sisters. I was like, it's Christmas Day. Well, for me, not for them, you know.
Yeah.
But so that started the – and then I was gingerly thinking, you know, how do I handle this with my birth mother? Because she was now remarried to a man she didn't tell. She had three daughters with Vince, not just two.
And so they divorced.
So she divorced Vince, and then she married Stan, an English bloke.
Did you meet all them?
Oh, my God. He was incredible. And he passed away recently. But his first conversation on the phone to me was, have you got any other secrets I should know about? And he said that to her, and he said it to me. Maybe there's more kids out there. He was a great guy. But she, you know, it was hard for her because I wrote her a letter, and her whole world just crumbled because she had never told Stan about me. She didn't tell her daughters about me. So she had a lot of explaining to do.
Anxiety. It made her
anxious. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. But she's a great.
It's interesting that people keep secrets, you know.
I think that secrets, especially like that, are probably the biggest burden on a woman's life. I mean,
especially women back then, that was sort of the
taboo.
What was routine to keep things secret.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And these women are carrying these things to their grave.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think, I bet that your sisters didn't even care. Like, if that was important to you to keep a secret, you know.
They could have cared less.
Yeah, right.
You know how my dad broke it to – he talked to my youngest sister, Amy, who was 22 at the time, and he said, oh, I just got off the phone with your sister. And she said, oh, I just spoke with Susie. He said, not that sister. She was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm like, and then she was like, welcome to the family. It's how we are. So it's been an amazing 12 years.
Now you get adopted at age one. Bring me forward.
Yeah. And so adopted into an amazing family. Very normal. My dad's an electrician. My mom's a nurse and hardworking.
And this is what city now?
Just outside of. So the family that had me all grew up in the city. They're all Toronto girls. Yeah. Oh, these girls are just, they know the city by the back of their hand. Yeah. You know, one is an engineer and a professor because it's not enough just to have one degree.
Right.
And then the do-gooder, artsy-fartsy one, works for Toronto International Film Festival, both university graduates, really great girls. And I was adopted into a family that lives in the suburbs of Toronto, a city called Burlington, which I think was just voted one of the most, if not the most beautiful city in Canada to live in. Just an idyllic sort of picturesque
background. I think I filmed the Olsen twins film in that community.
In Burlington?
Mm-hmm.
You're kidding.
It's about 20 minutes outside?
Yeah. I just saw that, actually. Yeah. Said that's really funny.
Isn't
that would be.
Yes. But you can imagine those are the houses and stuff, right?
Oh, that's how I grew up. Yeah. Sort of that idyllic.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I knew that I was adopted when I was 9. So I always knew there was something different because I was very different from my family. And
when did they tell you you were adopted?
At 9.
At 9.
Yeah.
But shit has started already happening before.
Oh, yeah.
That,
like
right?
At 6 or so.
Oh, okay.
6.
Tell me about that.
Well, just the grandfather and the uncle, the creepy fingers.
But
you
how
know?
Weird. This is somebody's father. Whose father was it?
My mom's.
And she was fine.
As far as I know.
So weird that he didn't get his hands on her.
I don't know. She came from a huge family, so 12.
She might have been just
who knows?
Passed over.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
She was the oldest, so she probably was, you know,
yeah.
a worker. But, you know, I always look at this and I always tell girls to this day that it can be a source of strength. You don't have to let it define you. It certainly is a part of my past, and I don't wish it on anyone, but it happens. And did you see that story, Dr. Drew? I read it today and I actually tweeted about it, about the 300 people arrested, a lot of them in Canada, teachers, doctors.
I did. Somebody tweeted about the doctors.
Unbelievable.
And they're all, some of them were a lot older and stuff.
All pedophiles. Like, and there's a whole
gross.
Community of just, you know, pornography and pedophilia, pornography that goes around. And there's a group of people. And I'm thinking, you know, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Well, they were sexually abused too. And there's about a... People debate what the number is, but 40 to 60% chance that somebody can start to develop these preferences.
So what I feel like in my heart is maybe it goes two ways, that you either become – because when I had my daughter, I became so intensely
– Protective.
Protective in many ways. You know, I remember holding her thinking, God, my poor mother. She held me for 5 minutes and had to give me away. Like, I wanted to cling on to this child and just make sure – and to make sure that – you know, there's something wrong.
Even your poor stepmom too. I mean, did she ever know that this happened?
Who?
Your stepmom? Did she ever find out?
You mean the my adoptive mother?
Yes.
Yeah, I call her my mother because she raised me. The other one didn't. But eventually I ended up telling her. But, you know, I wanted to tell you what I was reading on this tweet today, that they are, you know, the whole WikiLeaks and the government.
Yeah.
And who's the guy right now that's
Snowden?
Jeremy.
Oh.
Julian Assange.
Julian Assange. Yeah.
No, there's another guy right now that's he squealed on corporate spying. And his name is Jeremy. I'm going to find out because he needs to be. He could get 10 years in jail, and yet there are pedophiles out there that get 2. I'm like, I don't understand. Where is the justice?
Yeah.
These guys can and mess with kids' lives. They think they're just,
Hand.
You know.
Jeremy Hammond. Hand?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hammond. Jeremy Hammond. Hammond.
Now you said something that I want to.
He was actually just sentenced.
What did he get?
10 years.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, most of those pedophiles are getting 8 to 10 years, and most of them are
old. Yeah, and they're out. But they're out. You know,
most of them are going to end up dying in jail because they're old, a lot of them.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of the one that they compared, you know, he's getting a 2-year sentence. He's 23, and he's been, you know, and not just.
No, it's so. It is
hardcore pedophilia.
We have moved through a time, and I think we went through a little epidemic of this. I really do.
You don't think it's always going on?
Oh, it's
on
always
ever?
Been around, but yeah. I think the whole sexual revolution unleashed it. It's like, hey, whatever you're into, man.
Because of the internet?
Well, no. I think before that, I think when people's sexuality got unleashed, which is not a bad thing.
When do you think that was?
By 60s? By 68.
Yeah.
And then it really went on in the 70s.
So 70s, the
70s is when it went insane. 70s when it was...
Anything goes.
Anything goes.
And then 80s with AIDS, it was like, oh my God, reel it back in.
By the end of the 80s, it was a big pushback, yeah. And then we're sort of finding an equilibrium now, and now we're trying to find justice for the people who acted out and hurt people. There's a lot of it. There's a lot of it.
I think what these guys don't understand, these pedophiles, whatever, you know, atrocities they're perpetrating on children, is that for 5 minutes of their pleasure, it fucks with this kid's head for the rest of their life.
Right. Well, I want to talk about that because you just spoke about the event as just sort of a part of your narrative now.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when it happens, it gets walled off.
Correct.
And you can't access it. You literally biologically can't access it. It's just there as a like a boil that's like making your brain not work right or be spin or whatever.
Right.
Or seek out traumatic reenactments or whatever it might be. And so you've clearly had the therapy that lets you access that and just make it a piece of your life.
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell a young woman who's in the spin still?
To get help, to get counseling, because it will really help you in the future to deal with your a young brain doesn't have the mental capacity to wrap itself around what's going on to you physically. If you're 6, 7, 8, 9, you have no clue how to. So maybe it won't come out until you're 25 or 30, like it did for me. And it will come out the whole time, by the way. It's just that you won't address it until later
you,
on. Like,
you will tell yourself, I've dealt with that. It's no big deal. It's not bothering me anymore.
Or, correct. When you're ready to address it, you might do that. But I'm talking when you're 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, when you're not, you don't have the capacity to do that. It is already a part of your life, but you barge through it because it's happened and you move forward. And that's what you do.
Isn't that an interesting paradigm for you? Barging through,
right?
Just the way Steve Edwards described you as barging through difficult problems.
Exactly.
I've
always done that. Yeah. And you know, you just and then it's the small things that could get you.
Okay, here's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I want to, because your story does get rather interesting. The different variations.
It hasn't been interesting this far.
No. I mean,
it's going to people. Hang tight.
Extraordinary is more the word. The neighborhood girl and stuff is a piece that and all that is extraordinary. I want if you don't mind.
Sure.
But before we do, I'm going to have to take a break in a second. But before that, what caught my attention is distracting me is we have a call from France for you.
From
France, yeah.
Oh, comment ça va?
Matt?
Hello. Bonjour, Julien.
Bonjour, comment ça va?
Quelle heure est-il à bon?
What? I think he said something dirty.
No. Dr. Du knows I live in Burgundy near Beaune. But I used to live in L.A., and I used to love watching Julien on Good Day L.A. And,
thank you. Wait, can I?
Very interesting hearing your story.
Can I ask you what you're doing in France? I want to move from L.A. to France. I want to move to Burgundy and drink Burgundy.
Julien wants your number, Matt.
What's going on? Did a job take you out there?
Yeah, it was a job, but it's also I got really tired of living in L.A. for a number of reasons that Adam Carolla always harps about how horrible it is there. And,
you must have grown up in the Valley.
Here. Wonderful life.
Did you grow up in the Valley?
No. I actually originally from Chicago. I moved to L.A. when I was like 30 and lived there for, 15 years or something.
I can do it to you. I know. I do live in the Valley, and stop knocking the Valley, Dr. Drew. It's beautiful and smoggy.
I was thinking more Van Nuys.
I'm pretty close. But do you like life?
I lived in Topanga, which was wonderful. Topanga was wonderful. I always miss Topanga.
It's a throwback. It doesn't change. It's like if you go there, it's like you can feel the Manson family still live there.
No.
Okay, maybe not.
You're right. I've been up there. When you go down in those valleys, there's crazy stuff down there.
Well, they didn't live. They lived actually in Simi Valley, but one of the teachers that they killed lived in Topanga, Gary Hinman. But anyway, I'm digressing.
So, Matt, what's going on?
Well, I want to add a question about roid rage. Mm-hmm. My daughter here was in a relationship with a boyfriend, or still is, actually. He was a nice guy. Met him a few times, but he was a muscle guy. And then apparently he went... And I don't know if he just began steroids or he overdid it or something, but he went into a rage and he beat her up.
Oh.
And she was in the hospital and all that. And then after she got out, we said, you got to stay with us. You can't go back to the guy, obviously. But she swore that it was just because of the steroids. He's not like that. And she went back to him. And my question is, can a guy – I mean, I could never hit a woman.
Right.
If I went on steroids, could I do this? Is it possible?
I don't know that I can give you a accurate, so to speak, answer to that, because no one has actually done a study on this, right? You can't really study that. I know my friend Mike Catherwood, who I broadcast Loveline with, always makes the comment that, he was a severe drug addict. He was roided out. And he said, I never would hit a woman. I would never do some of these things that – addicts do. So he gets circumspect when people blame their using
on steroids.
Well, blame their behavior on their using.
Right.
However, having said that, I've seen some extreme behaviors on steroids. So if somebody's prone to bipolar disorder or something and they get on steroids, they can be out of their minds. They literally can be. So I don't want to say it couldn't be, but I would say this is that whatever the cause, she can't be around him until he gets off the steroids and until the domestic violence is addressed in some sort of therapeutic way, to me.
So he's telling her that he is off of it, and she's telling you that. Do you believe he's off of it?
I'm not sure. He did. The laws here did confine him to a hospital and therapeutic behavior for several weeks all that, but and now she says he's off of it. And
why did he take it? Why did he take it in the first place? Of
his, he's a muscle guy. He wants to increase his muscle mass.
Body image disorder. Yeah,
but unless you're in like a competitive, I don't understand that. Unless it's a sport or something, why would you be
amazed how many guys do that?
Really?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, it's very.
So that's the thing that some guys do. Like women will go to extreme measures for other.
For body stuff.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. No, guys take steroids.
That's tough because you have a daughter. I have a daughter. I'm horrible when it comes to justice. I really would want to beat him up myself.
I've been involved with domestic violence organizations, and it's not something you can just let pass. You have to do something active with it. And while I want to give him a little bit of a nod for the steroids and maybe something happened, whatever it is. But, you know, steroid abuse is a problem in itself. Mm-hmm. If he was manic, that's a problem in and of itself. He engaged in domestic violence, that's a separate problem. All these things need to be intervened upon, and none of them are necessarily going to magically vanish just mm-hmm. because he stops the steroids, including the steroid using. And by the way, he could easily flip over to something else. There's a lot of cross addiction with stimulants. So, Matt, it's really concerning. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for the information. Appreciate it.
All right,
well,
buddy.
Good luck with that, Matt.
Is she over there with you, or where is she?
Oh yeah. Here in France. Yeah, she's French. Yeah.
Wow. Cool. All right.
Well, best of luck to you.
Thanks, Matt.
You sound like a good dad.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci bien. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Jillian Barbie after this.
Hi, I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And this week, on This Week with Larry Miller, I had something that touched me a lot. I love Batman and I love Superman, but this week I saw pictures of someone named Bat Kid, and I'll tell you all about it here. Check us out at LarryMillerPodcast.com.
Now we'll shout out to our friends at GoToMeeting. Maybe getting your team together for the holiday. It becomes tough. The weather's rough. Air traffic, airlines are sort of undependable. And people are going away for the holidays. Well, we have the perfect solution, of course. It is our friends at GoToMeeting by Citrix. Powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate online. Even if the people you're meeting with are on vacation or can't get a flight, whatever it might be, from wherever they are, you can go to meetings, share screens, work together on documents, spreadsheets, projects in real time, turns your webcam into your HD video conference meeting. You can go or attend GoToMeeting from any Mac, PC, smartphone, or tablet. It's easy. We love GoToMeeting here. The irony is we use GoToMeeting for meetings on virtually every other advertiser. So GoToMeeting is part of the life here at the Corolla Network. Start hosting a GoToMeeting in seconds from your computer or mobile device by signing up for a free 30-day trial. No credit card required to get started. Visit GoToMeeting.com. That's GOTO, no number two. It's just GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button and use the promo code Dr. Drew. Remember to use that promo code Dr. Drew at GoToMeeting.com and start meeting today. Meeting is believing. Yeah, Jillian, you're asking about this cool music?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
It's like loungy. And
well,
cool.
Chris, little known fact, is actually a very talented musician. This is not his music, but he has provided me with a bunch of, what would you call it?
Groovy tunes.
But what kind of...
Oh, they're not published or something?
They're unpublished
music. No, they're from our good friends at Extreme Music who do production music, so you're not going to find these anywhere else.
Right, they're production music.
That. Well,
that's the word, production
music.
Let
me ask you, though, why wouldn't they put this out on an album
Well,
or
that's
something?
What we're going to do. Well, we did. You can get it right now,
the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast EP, which features this and six other hand-picked songs, including the theme song from the show. And we're Drew and I are working on a full-length album for the holidays.
An LP. Yeah, that you can play in your party.
Well, I was just going to say, it sounds like that kind of, if I'm cooking, I could have this in the background if I had a party.
Yes, this one, and so what they do is they give me there's another one.
That's
give
great.
Us, they give us dozens and dozens and dozens of songs, and I sort of pick the sound that I'm looking that I would think would be.
Oh,
because
nice.
You know why? Because I was around in the 60s, I remember really what the background music sounded like. If I were to make the soundtrack to Mad Men, I know exactly what it sounded like.
Yeah.
Because I remember, I didn't like it then, by the way. I kind of hated it. It kind of irritated me, but I know the sound.
The
and now
show
I kinda
did?
Like it. No,
the
I
sound.
The, I remember
you were young.
I was like 8 years old, 5 years old, 6 years
your
old.
Parents playing it.
The adults would play that music all the damn time because they would have these big consoles with record players,
yes.
And they just were into it. So it was always going.
That's
and
funny.
And I just know the sound. And
I so love I, it.
And so
cocktail
I, and,
shaker
and,
music.
And the other thing, my little twist on it is, I like swing. I like swing music. So I bring in a little swing in the background too. Yeah.
Yes. I love it.
That sound right?
Just trying to create some really cool textures, too.
Well, my favorite era is the 60s. I love all the women that came out of there. Claudia Cardinale, Brigitte Bardot, Sharon Tate, Ursula Andress. I love, and I'll watch these movies over and over. And this is the kind of music that they would, Anne Margaret.
It. Yeah, this is it.
You know what I mean?
And I think it's just
love
cool
it.
To be able to play this at a party. People, it would create a certain kind of vibe.
Ambience, yeah. It's beautiful.
So for more information, go to drdrew.com/music.
And then when are we going to have this LP out?
It'll be on drdrew.com/music. So just keep
soon.
Checking that. Yeah.
A few weeks?
You
we want to have
it
for the holidays.
By the time the
sure.
show airs, it might.
You can hear the ice in the cocktail shaker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, of course. First thing I'm interested in is encouraging alcohol consumption. That's
yes. Well, then they can go see you.
But by the same token, I'm not the narc. I'm not telling you not to do it either. I know people are going to.
Wait, do people get around you? Exactly. Do people get around you and not want to, like, no, your friends?
They freak out when I have a glass of wine.
Why?
Because somehow that is seen as hypocritical.
Oh,
because
give me a break.
Here's the deal. I'm not interested in telling people what to do and not to do. I don't do that.
But here's the thing. You are an expert on addiction. Does that mean you can't have a glass of wine?
Right.
You might not be an addict.
Or how about when I had my surgery, I took Vicodin. I took
what?
Codeine or something. What?
No, you're not allowed to.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
exactly.
You're an addiction
like,
expert.
No, I took
what the heck is that?
By the way, I hate them, but I took them. And it's weird. Yeah, it's weird. God forbid if I were ever drunk. That'd
people,
be bad news.
You've never been?
No. But if I were as an
Dr. Drew,
like
wasted.
College.
I'd love not. Why buy that podcast? Wasted on Vicodin and wine. Forget about it. And then that music in the background.
And people think that somehow, like, I'm anti-pod, anti-alcohol, anti. I'm not anti anything.
No, I know
I'm interested in people living their life and having a great life. When it gets to be a problem, I can help if they want. If they want.
Yeah.
If they don't want, that's
you're
on them too.
You're not shoving it down their throat.
No,
exactly. No. My question to you is. And we brought this up on the show the other night on HLN about pot. My uncle died of Hep C because he is a heroin user.
Mm.
He died at 19. His brother.
He died at 19?
Yes.
Oof.
He did. And his brother wrote an article. It was about because Kevin used to smoke pot. And my uncle was a believer that pot was that, you know, and so is my mother, a gateway, because it's one of her brothers, that it was a gateway drug. Do you think that, because I know, and I brought up my neighbor the other night, because he's 72 and he had prostate cancer, blah, 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 but he's been smoking since the 60s.
Whatever.
That's all he did. So some people are prone, they have that gene where that won't be enough. Like Artie Lang's new book I just read, Crash and Burn, it's amazing, but it was never enough.
Here's the way pot works, is that people that use it regularly,
mm-hmm.
when you ask them what they thought of the drug the first time they got high on it, they'll say, I loved it. They'll always say the same thing. And if you look at the chemistry, the biology of pot, it actually stimulates the love areas of the brain. Actually, the mom nurturance areas of the brain get stimulated. So you literally, it's like being at the breast. That you love it.
Or it makes you sick.
Or it makes you anxious or whatever. Wow. Yeah. But if you're going to get addicted, you love it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just thinking about doing it all the time. And for some people, over a certain period of time, and what that period of time is, no one knows. Maybe a year, maybe 30 years.
Stops working. Okay.
And that's when people switch to something else. So it's not technically a gateway because they don't think, oh, I'm a drug addict now, I'm going to use other things. It's just they're accustomed to using substances to feel better,
mm-hmm.
and they start looking for a solution to this thing that they don't understand is caused by the pot, and they find their way to other things, and that's where it goes.
Okay.
But there are plenty of people that stay with pot the whole way if they could. And some people learn to do that by kind of going on and off it, so some of that tolerance goes away. Mm-hmm. It's not even tolerance. It's sort of resistance to the high.
Do you think that most people that are chasing that are just that voice is just to shut themselves up because they're so in their own head they want to escape something or they want to drink
till
they don't think
this
anymore?
This is back to what we were talking about is that typically that if you have a trauma like you had and it's not dealt with, it's there like a big sore boil and you're not consciously aware of it, but your body will start seeking solutions for that and drugs and alcohol soothe it.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that's how
people can get hooked if they.
It's usually the if you get bad enough, this is what I tell people. If you have bad enough addiction, you need to see me. You definitely have the gene. because you have to have that genetic background, and then you almost undoubtedly had some severe trauma that's accelerating this.
Do most alcoholics and drug addicts have those two combinations?
If you see me, always.
Why?
By the time
always.
They get to me.
Without
yeah,
a doubt.
It never is not. It's just the way it is.
It's an equation that works.
Bad enough to see me. Remember, I see only the worst drug addicts and alcoholics.
Wow.
I would see really sick people. But if you have that bad an addiction that you're going to come see me, it's 100%. Maybe it's 99.9 or something.
You mean that they go through other people before they can get to you, or do they –
whatever.
They have to get
however they get there by many means. Sometimes it's the court. Sometimes it's the ICU.
Like mandate.
Sometimes whatever. But if you get to my – we had a facility when – I'm not doing it right now, but we had a facility that our reputation was we could handle the sickest psychomedical patients. And
hardest.
We would just, when everything else was done, we'd get them. And we were good. We were really good, and we were cheap. God,
wow,
were we cheap.
Really?
Oh, my God. And – they got all screwed up. Yeah. It's sad.
It's funny. I was thinking about because this whole Obamacare, coming up and growing up in Canada where there's socialized medicine, that's what I grew up with. That's the only thing I knew until I was 22 and I moved to Miami. And I remember knowing some people. I was a kid, but they were older that had major issues and they could go and get taken care of and it would be free. And here, when I moved here and there were people that had issues and they'd have to go into rehab, it was like $30,000. How does a person pay for that?
I know it's challenging and it's a mess. But by the way, I worked for the Canadian healthcare system because they didn't have enough facilities to handle
that
alcoholics.
That is a big problem.
And they would send their CAT scans down to us. They would send because they wouldn't build the infrastructure. They didn't have the money to build it.
Yeah.
So they'd send them to us. So here's the comedy. They send them to us every month. We'd get a plane load full. We'd get a bunch of them, and we'd do the work. We'd send them back, and they had aftercare. They had good aftercare for them, but they didn't have the primary treatment facilities. And we did that for about a year. And after a year, we noticed they had not paid us a penny. And
they're like, we have to pay. We're Canadian. This is a healthcare thing.
Well, it got worse.
Yikes!
They go, oh, hold on a second. There's legislators in session right now. We'll put it on there. Oh, legislators decided 5 cents on the dollar. Take it or leave it.
Oh, that's not cool.
So that's how they do it. That's how they get.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So
my mom is a nurse and she worked in the healthcare system. And I remember her having to go get an MRI and it was a Saturday or something and they couldn't do it.
No way.
I was like,
what?
No way. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So there's definitely
pros and
cons. But I don't like this whole idea of it, jumping on Obama. It's communism. It's not socialism.
Well, what bothers me is that I kind of. We'll see how it settles out. We need to change our system. All physicians kind of agree with that.
Yeah.
System is broken.
Yeah.
What bothers me is that they made a kind of a market kind of a solution, and then when the market responded, they're pissed.
Yeah.
It's
like,
what did you think was going to happen?
Yeah.
Insurance companies make money, and they're going to get rid of things that don't make the money, and doctors are not going to sign up for those insurances. That's going to be the next wave.
Aren't you glad that you have a backup career, Dr. Drew? I mean, really? This is now becoming a big career. But
really? No,
really?
Yes.
Yeah.
It forced me to push into other areas.
Yeah. But you can still do what you do.
But I still now can practice medicine and not worry about it, which is really nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
you still get
nice.
To do what you do, which is, help people who need it and entertain people. This is,
Very grateful.
You really?
I'm very grateful.
Yeah. Although the stories that you cover on HLN, there's such a range. It's so heavy sometimes that then you always have some lighter stuff, which thank God you have to counter out. Because I remember just working in news for 25 years, people would say, and that's why I liked for that morning show to bring a certain level of lightness because people at the end of the beginning of their day, they're having coffee, they're getting their kids ready for school. It can't all be just death and destruction. You won't want to leave your house.
Well, my sort of instructions now at HLN are to get younger people in.
Mm-hmm.
And because they were going just for that courtroom people for a while there.
There's a lot of other people out
now
there.
Now they say, Nancy does courtroom.
Yeah.
You find a way to get 18 to 40-year-olds in.
Absolutely.
And I said, well, if you're going to bring in young people, you have to be funny.
Yeah.
Because they want to laugh.
They need to be informed, entertained. That's why I love watching.
Informed and entertained, right.
Jon Stewart.
Yep.
Because they're getting their political information with just the satirical, great sense of humor.
That's right. So
and
watch us. That's what.
Yeah. No, I know. And that's why I love being part
us,
of it. Yeah. Because it's sort of that varying. And also social media being huge. When I left Fox, they didn't understand that, social media was huge. And I had a couple hundred thousand followers. I was the only local person. And they were like, they didn't know how to utilize it.
Wow.
And they didn't know. They didn't even. Not only did they not know how to utilize it, they didn't care to see the relevance of it. And I would say news is dying. TV news is a dinosaur. You guys better get in the game and use, but it just wasn't meant to be for that. So that's why I'm fortunate to be able to come do HLN with you when I do, because I still get to talk about the topics.
And be kind of fun.
And still be a little light on that, of course. I love having you. By the way, as we're on air, Dr. Drew is totally texting. He's not even looking at me.
I've got a medical thing going on
Welcome
here.
To the show.
Right? I'm a good multitasker, but you kind of...
I'm a really good multitasker.
Obviously.
I sort of weirdly gratified by it.
You're hosting a show and you're doling out a prescription for a patient. But, you know, it's all in a day's work. Your wife gave birth to three babies.
I know. That was
her vagina, so please, give me a break.
I know. Thank you. I agree with you totally.
I know you do. That's one of the rare men that do.
That, to me, that's like, women, they got it going on.
They do. I think it's the enlightened people get that, especially men. Some men just don't. Get it.
Well, we as men like our male stuff and the fact that we as men have done an awful lot in the world.
But I think the truest form of an alpha male is a man who is completely sympathetic and understanding of what a woman goes through. That's my idea of an alpha male, not just somebody who's out there,
well,
you know.
To be fair,
What?
Women, when they want an alpha male, what they long for is the protection and caring.
Correct. And caring.
Yeah.
See, to me, that's one of the biggest things.
So let's go back to your history.
Yeah.
So let's go back to
boring.
No, it's not boring. It's compelling.
I always feel like I've told this story before about the girl who abused me. You want to talk about her again?
Wendy in the tent with the rocks.
But
for some reason, Jillian, it is a story that stays under my skin. I don't think people hear it.
Really?
And I think maybe this format might, because television and radio kind of goes by. You know what I mean? You told it on Stern before, right?
Yes.
But that's a different listenership. They almost don't give a shit.
No, really?
Yeah.
They don't. So, the fact that they were laughing at me while I was telling it didn't indicate.
Right.
No. Of course. And I know that's the audience.
So grandpa does what?
Wow. Jeez. Go right for it there, Dr. Drew. Why don't you? Let's just say he was very...
You said handsy. So touch it first.
We call it creepy uncle and
would
handsy.
Would he play a game or something?
Yeah, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of that. And
did it progress to oral sex and all kind of stuff?
I've blocked out a lot of stuff. But yeah, I mean, there's certainly some of that.
He just kept it going.
Yeah.
For how long?
Well, I'm going to say for a few years. And because of, you know, I was always the little girl, like, so thankful that I got adopted into a great family. I was so thankful that I would never wanted to put anybody
out or rock
the boat. Exactly.
Wow.
So that's how you sort of.
They might send you back.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. The thought of going back to an orphanage would just, like, put my mind in a tailspin. Isn't that crazy? Mm-hmm. I mean, I say orphanage. I tend to think of it as it was the Catholic Children's Aid Society of Toronto.
And you had probably had a fantasy about it as a child.
Well, I do know. It's funny because when my parents told me they picked me or they chose me, I really, until I was 35 years old, thought that they actually walked through a line of babies and picked me. I mean, how bloody ignorant can you be? But
it's a fantasy.
I guess it's a fantasy in some ways, but literally they get a call and they say, okay, we have a healthy baby girl.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
But it was probably an effective fantasy too, because you felt special, picked out of a crowd.
Of course. Yeah. And that's nice. I think it is a nice feeling. Yeah. I never felt the weight that some people do that comes with adoption. I just never did. It was never my bag. I always felt, you know, very special.
Did grandpa and uncle know they were tag-teaming?
Good question. Don't know. Mm. The uncle that did it was
together.
The one who was 19, who died at 19. He's the one.
The heroin addict.
Correct.
So somebody got to him is what you can tell. What for sure. Probably dad sexually abused him.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you're more familiar with that than I would be, but I'm sure that there was some of that going on.
For sure.
I think, you know, getting back to you can look at yourself as a victim. You can say... I remember I told an ex-boyfriend, this is a true story, God bless him, a Sicilian guy I dated for 7 years, and I finally had the balls to come out and tell somebody that this was going on, you know, or this went on when I was a kid. And I always had a way of bringing it up very casually because I didn't want everybody, it was just like this heavy story, like, oh, I was molested, and then, you know, bring the party down. So we were at dinner one night, I just told him, and he said, the first thing he said to me was, do you think that you were wearing anything or said anything that could have provoked it? And I started laughing.
You were six.
I did, but that's the whole point. So I started laughing. I'm like, I can't even, wait, what? It's like, there's so much just ignorance and God bless him. I couldn't even be pissed off at him. It was too funny and ignorant.
Well, I'm going to say something crazy.
Yeah. I was wearing a bikini, but whatever.
Six-year-old bikini. So when you are been through something like that, yeah. you will tend to be attracted to people that have that perpetrator tendency.
What do you mean? What? Like who?
It's called a traumatic reenactment. That once you've been through a horrible thing, you'll just be naturally, because of the trauma, attracted to people and circumstances
wow.
that are prone to that kind of behavior.
That's interesting.
And I wonder if this guy was prone to that, which is why he thought that way. It's such a fucking crazy thought.
I
can't even imagine.
Matt, who says that? And I don't
know.
You know
who says that?
People who have
perpetrators say
okay.
that.
Okay, that's interesting.
So fuck.
But I was a teenager when I told him, and my first reaction was to laugh.
But what's crazy, if you'd ever had children with him, he might have been, see this.
Yeah, I can't even.
Is that nuts?
Imagine. But you know what's so funny? It's I have such a strange sense of when people do these crimes to kids, or when I'm on your show, we're talking about somebody who has murdered somebody, that Jody Arias trial just about did me in. I get this rage in me, Dr. Drew. It's like, I want that person on death row. Mm. And that's where people, when I was on your show last week, they're like, because I was saying that girl who put the other girl, basically made her jump to her death. I said she is responsible, and I went up against everybody. But I do feel like when do we become responsible for our own actions? And, if I go out and murder people, then I believe I should be put to death. That's me. I believe in the death penalty. My ex, he's a sniper in the Marines, does not believe in the death penalty.
Crazy.
Go figure.
That's weird. Yeah. I think the bottom line, the way I look at it is I can't fault you for being sick. I can't fault you for having crazy impulses. I can't fault you for having been traumatized, anybody. But the point at which you start acting out those behaviors, mm-hmm. now I can fault you.
Right.
Now it's
exactly.
on you. Now it's on you.
That's
if you don't get
exactly,
help beforehand, it's well, I'm sympathetic. But after you've crossed over, it's on you now.
Well, and that's where your actions, you have to be accountable and mm-hmm. responsible. And I don't feel that we are a lot of times. I feel like we just want to pass it off. And that's where I get outraged. I feel like some of these murder trials, and you cover them more than, I'm friends with family members of the Manson family. I'm friends with Deborah Tate, who is Sharon's sister. Very
wow.
good friends for years. I've been to the hearings, the parole hearings. I'm friends
Crazy.
With J.C. Bring's nephew, Anthony, who's producing a beautiful documentary on his uncle, who was also, murdered by the Mansons. And so I see the ripple effect. It's not just that, these people were supposed to be put to death in 71 and it was overturned. The death penalty was overturned. They've had a lifelong in prison. And this life, believe me, they're not weaving baskets. They're doing okay. Mm. Some of them got married behind bars. Some of them have had babies. Tex Watson has had four kids.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
denied Sharon the right to have her one baby, slaughtered her. So, yeah, I get a little pissed, and I think they should be dead. And when Susan Atkins died, I was very excited. Deborah called me, and I said, ding dong, the witch is dead. Yay. I had no sympathy whatsoever for her. And at the end of her life, she was trying to come out and say, on sympathy, because she has cancer. Can you just let her die with her family? No, because you didn't let Sharon die with her family. I'm sorry. You have to be accountable for your actions.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm very, and I had my old publicist, his grandmother was raped and stabbed with a screwdriver by a convict.
Jesus.
And he did get to see that guy be put to death up in Northern California. And I went to lunch with both those, Deborah Tate and John. And she said to him, did it change your life when they put your grandmother's murderer to death? Did it help you? And he said, absolutely.
Interesting.
And, for some people, it doesn't bring any resolution.
Mm. Some feel guilty and stuff. They have all kinds of mixed feelings.
But, I don't feel guilty because your actions, I have a choice. I'm not, going to go out and murder a pregnant woman and slaughter five other people. Not going to happen in my lifetime.
Yeah.
So I don't have to worry about getting put to death. Period, bar none. Listen, my girlfriend's here and she's from Iran. She says, you know what they do in Iran? They still have the public hangings.
Yeah.
I'm not advocating that crazy behavior,
yeah.
but if you steal, your hands get chopped. There's a punishment. And I realize as I'm saying this to you, I can tell you do not believe in the death penalty, which I'm sure.
No.
Really?
That's not true. I have mixed feelings about all kinds of things like that, but I basically, I am for people. Listen, once people engage in behavior, that's it. It's over. It's
yeah.
over for me. It's the system
yeah.
picks up. I don't.
But the system sucks.
I feel as though I'm not smart enough to declare what should be.
That's what my ex says. Yeah, that's his take on it.
To me, the death penalty, I think it kind of works, and I think it kind of makes people like you feel better. And I think, okay, mm-hmm. so I'm not going to oppose it. That's for sure. Even though it's kind of a mixed feeling.
Well,
about
are
it.
Your mixed feelings derived from any of, like, for me, I do know that there have been innocent people that have been put to death. That's a big mistake. Yeah, that's a big mistake.
Also, I don't trust government very much. I'm sort of libertarian, and, you know, I worry about the overreach of the state.
Sure.
So a state that puts people to death, if you think about the. Mm-hmm. If you really think that through, it gets a little weird. But don't object to the will of people.
And again, I'm just speaking passionately because I'm friends with two people that happened, like completely outside of each other, happened to have had family members murdered. And so I've seen it up close in the...
I think I would want that if I were...
Well, you know, and the other thing is
I always feel like I'm a flawed, weak person because I would want, you know, my passions would prevail. You know what I mean? But... That's the way it goes. You know, my rationality, I can't think through when my passions are in. It's like, I would want the guy killed. I'd want to kill him myself, you know?
Well, and the other thing that people don't think about is, you know, if let's use the Manson family as an example. Let's say those, you know, they'd all been put to death. They would be gone and Deb would go on with her life.
Yeah.
As it turns out, both Deborah, Patty Tate, who's now dead, and the mother, Doris Tate, lived their life. And still Deborah's living her life every
fear.
6 months.
Yeah,
not even the fear. Dr. Drew, she has to her whole life is about going to these stupid hearings.
How fair is that? Yeah.
And because there's not one or two of them, right. there's many of them.
And we're paying for all this.
Of course.
Well, I want to go. I'm running out of time, so I want to go back to your point here.
Damn it, I was trying to get you away from
this. I could tell. So uncle, grandpa do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move away from them, right? Is that what happens?
No, we lived 3 hours from them, but we used to go in summer vacations were there. So,
And they were together, the two of them?
Well, my uncle lived at the house.
Oh, Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Double whammy. Yeah.
Did you object? Because you really didn't want to rock the boat.
No, of course. I did object. I mean, how do you object? You know it's wrong.
But I mean, I don't want to go.
Towards the end. Yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, when my grandfather died when I was 13, I was celebrating in my room. I had music on. I was dancing. It wasn't very pleasant for my mother, I'm sure. But for me, it was a little celebratory.
But it's funny. It's the same way you feel about these people, these death row.
There you go. Yeah, connection.
Or what's her name when you said Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. It's
Susan
the same
Atkins.
Exact feeling, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're 100% right, and I've never made that connection. Yeah. It's interesting. You always look for those connections, and you find them.
Mm-hmm.
I've never thought about it. You know what it is? It's injustice that makes me mental. It pisses me off when I see somebody who has—
Unfairness?
Unfairness.
Yeah.
Exactly. Unfairness, injustice in the end. If you know, I it makes me crazy. And so I think that's that connection perhaps.
So he dies.
Yeah.
Uncle's still around. He dies not long after that, I imagine.
19? Who died first?
Oh, really? Oh,
I can't remember.
But you celebrated both their deaths.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting. You live to see
both of them.
Justice.
Somebody said to me, and I think it was my therapist at the time, because I did do 4 years of therapy many years ago, and she said, is it something that you would address and you maybe talk to them? And I said, well, I can't. They're both dead. So, you know, I had at least that sort of knowledge. Like, I had made closure myself.
Yeah, it helped you close it.
Oh,
yeah,
my goodness.
Now, this girl in the neighborhood, tell me about that.
Yeah, don't know where she is today, but she was nasty.
What happened?
Well, she was, and I'm trying to think back if she was babysitting or she was just hanging out, but we had like a tent in the front yard, and she was the big neighborhood bully. She was scary.
How old were you? How old was she?
I was probably about 8, maybe 7. She would have been about 14, and I mean big girl, like a big girl, and physically much stronger and more
capable.
How
weird that she's hanging around with a 7-year-old.
Well, here's the thing. I remember playing in my front yard. We used to make in Canada, you make forts, snow forts.
Yeah.
You'd put, you could make, literally, if you made it well enough, you put water on it. I don't know if you, for people who get it from the cold, from cold places, you make an igloo or you make some sort of a snow fort, and then you put water on it and you make ice on the outside. When you crawl inside, you could actually take your coat off and it's comfortable. So you could sit there in your t-shirt. But on this particular occasion, I just remember her coming and us having a tent. I was with other friends. I think eventually they got called home for dinner and she lived up the street and still stayed and hung out. And I just remember her being a menacing sort of presence.
Why do you think you stayed with this horrible
chicken? My front yard. I was already home.
You were playing. Yeah.
I was playing and
couldn't get rid of her.
Yeah, well, certainly not. She was a very big girl and she was a teenager. It was intimidating. And I certainly wasn't aware that, you know, girls could do that to other girls. It didn't even register to me. Mm. Even though I'd already gone through some things with the opposite sex. So, yeah, it was one of those situations where she was just abusive. And I don't remember it being verbally abusive, but certainly physically and sexually and degrading. So I was terrified of her. And I was always the girl that if I saw someone at school getting bullied, I was a big mouth. I had no shame in my game. I remember somebody picking on my sister on the school bus, and I went ballistic verbally, and I had a mouth on me. And I don't know why I didn't use it for myself. I had a cousin that stuttered, and we would go visit her. And when school kids would make fun, I remember hitting a guy over the head with a toboggan because he was making fun of my cousin Janice. I almost cold cocked him and knocked him out. But I didn't care. I didn't give a shit. I was like, shut up, you know?
I didn't have the
same voice for myself.
Right. It's kind of common that you can't come to your own defense. But it's kind of.
Is that common?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's good that you could come to defense of others, though. That's probably some part of the strength you pulled upon to push through and all that and eventually get well yourself.
Well, I guess it's one of those things. You know, you just, when you look back.
Because people go, why did you stay with this girl? Because you're already a victim.
Well, and also when it's happening, you're scared shitless and
you freeze.
Your pants are off and it's like, what the hell are you going to do? Run out of the house naked? Like, it's scary.
Well, you freeze.
You freeze.
The freeze response is something that victims have indoctrinated into their biology. So every time people cross over, you just froze on and you go out of body.
Out of body. That's exactly right. You can freeze physically, but your mind goes up to the ceiling and can look down on what's happening. It's removed. It's what is it called?
Dissociation.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of that that goes on. But, you know, I would tell girls that it doesn't have to define you. It can actually make you a stronger person. It made me very.
But you can't do it without help, though.
You cannot do it without help. You can't just declare I'm a stronger person.
You have to actually get help with it. Well, Jillian, we've actually, we're way out of time, but I could talk to you all day.
I know. Me too. Thank you.
We should do another one. We should do
something. I'll come in all the time. I love it. I love hanging out with you. I'll be here again tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow.
But any place we should look for you other than my HLN program, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock?
No, I'm trying to get a gig, Dr. Drew.
Maybe. We got you. No more commercials with the.
No, we're done with Nutrisystem. And it was great. But no, I'm just here.
Those were good ads, I thought.
They were fun ads with Terry Bradshaw.
That was recent, right? It was not that long ago.
Yeah, it was like maybe a year and a half ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there'll be more.
Yeah.
Ask Jillian is the Twitter handle. The Jillian Barbary, BARBERIE, is the website.
Thanks, Dr. Drew.
Thank you, Jillian. Great to see you.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That does the Dr. Drew Podcast.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com.